Where are the strangest places you have big fans? Because I know you, and we'll talk about the UK, because I know you just did a major UK thing. But where are the strangest places that you suddenly say, okay, there are people in this language that are totally into listening to Broke Down Piece of Man?
Well, we play a lot in Scandinavia. We used to go over there twice a year, and we played in Finland a number of times. And it's interesting, when you usually start in Norway and you go through Sweden and then get to Finland. That's how it geographically works. And when you get into Norway, you realize you can't read any of the signs because it's just so strange. And Sweden is just the same. But at least you recognize the letters. An N is an N. A P is a P, you know. You get into Finland, and even the letters are different. And then you really know you're on another part of the planet.
And you wonder,
a summer festival there one time, and these people were drunk for 3 days. But we played to, like, thousands of people at 3 o'clock in the morning, and the sun was still up. So it was one of the more bizarre experiences of my life.
Okay, am I mistaken, or I'm looking at the inside cover of the latest Going to Jukesville, which, by the way, Passion Street is just, you know, it should be a hit, no question about it.
Get right on that.
Well, I'm going to play it, that's for sure. Am I mistaken, or are you guys there hanging out on the remnants of a wrecked drive-in?
I don't have it in front of me, so I don't remember what it looks like. I think it's one of those shots where somebody took a picture of the band and superimposed it onto a background.
Did they really?
I don't really know, you know. As I say, I have people that take care of that stuff, and they say, can I do this? And I go, sure, do whatever you want to do.
I love it. You're just dedicated to performing, and you'll let the marketing folks do their job. Boy, that's
Well, I don't really have marketing folks. The people who do the, I mean, Michelle, who did the artwork, is a fan who's now, you know, part of the organization. And I figure, what do I know about pictures? She knows about, she's got a background in design. Let her do it.
Exactly. Best gig, I mean, it's going to be a hard one, but today, yesterday, when you look back on what has to be thousands upon thousands upon thousands of gigs, I'm sure you probably didn't keep a record of that, and probably a good thing because you'd go nuts. But best gig or most amazing gig or something that happened that you ever played that you just look back and say, oh, man, if I could do that one again, boy.
Well, that happens in the oddest moments. I mean, it might be the place where it's like half full and it's a funky little club and everybody's got the flu. And all of a sudden you rip off this great show and you think, God, where did that come from? But memorable moments for me is I saw James Brown in around 1963 at the convention park in Asbury Park, convention hall in Asbury Park, which is a big 3,000-seat bunker, basically, in cement. And I got to play there, I guess, 10 or so. Yeah, about 15 years later, it was sold out, and we played there. And I really hadn't remembered that I played there until I was walking backstage, and I'm walking out to go out on stage to play. And I went, wait a minute, this is where I saw James Brown, which is one of those life-affirming moments for me. I went, wow, ooh, I would love to do that. And it was just a real thrill to be walking on the stage where I saw somebody play that made me want to do it. And actually, it made me feel like, well, I guess I made it.
Yeah, no, I could see that. The defining moment when you're stepping on the same stage that an idol did his
thing
on.
And it was a really pivotal moment in my life, too, because I really had never really had thought about being a musician, even though I had learned how to play harmonica and I knew a lot of lyrics just because I liked music, but I wasn't one of those guys that saw Elvis Presley or the Beatles on TV and thought, oh, I'm going to be a musician. It seemed so alien to my way of thinking.
Yeah, but it worked.
Rich, well, then the bar thing came in, and they say, well, if you become a musician, you can hang out at bars. So I thought, great.
Yeah, that's all it takes. Free drinks and free girls, right?
Well, I don't know about free girls. But
well, no, there's no such thing.
The girls would talk to you at that point. You didn't do it in high school.
How many of us have done that? Boy, I'll tell you, that's why I DJ'd in clubs, right? It's the DJ's popular.
That's right. At least women would talk to you.
Yeah, as opposed to walk by. So Richie LaBamba, there at the beginning, there today, that's a long time. He's survived.
LaBamba's been around for quite a while. He's on the Conan O'Brien show with Mark the Love Man Pender. So he comes out and plays with us when he can, both of them. And he's certainly on the album, of course.
Yeah.
He's got four kids now, or five or eight or something like that. And So it's he still comes out and plays, and he's still exactly the same, funny and brilliant and just a good guy.
So some of my favorite Southside songs are, I mean, obviously the first stuff, but then there's things like that. I'm annoyed that they never became hits. You know, like, why is love such a sacrifice? So there was this woman named Patty that was on the background vocals on that. Who was she?
Oh, Patty and Lisa and Susie. You
know, yeah.
Chicken Sisters.
Yeah, those people. But you see, unless you dig deep, you don't realize kind of, you know, Patty, what happened to her, huh? Kind of interesting, isn't it?
Well, you know, they're all still singing and playing, too. They're all writing. I just saw Susie not too long ago. She's making her own album, and they're all good.
Yeah, well, you like I said, the fraternity. So.
Well, they would be the sorority.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But maybe they'd like it. Well, you know, some of these women could be in the fraternity. You never know. Yeah, some
I can
of
them, tell you stories.
Some of those women who hang out in bars, you know, you got to be careful there. Will you all, I mean, this is a rhetorical question, but will you always do covers? And is that really part of being a bar band, putting your take on Walk Away Renee or No Easy Way Down? Or is that a bar band symbol? If you don't do covers, even if you've got original songs, if you don't do covers, is it true that you're not a bar band?
I don't know if that's true. I think the bar band thing is a wide enough definition that it would encompass whatever really you could do as long as you please the audience. But I'll always do covers because I've got thousands of songs that I want to sing at one point or another, and I'm always hearing new ones, too. I want to do that song someday. And I have no qualms. It's not like I write 100 great songs a year. I write just barely enough to claim to be a songwriter. So I always like outside material. But also, I just like the idea of if I hear a song, whether it's Cole Porter or Tom Waits, and I want to do it, I can do it, and the hell with it.
So do you consider it kind of part of your, I hate to say your calling, but to bring obscure or lost King Goffin songs to all of us who missed them because we didn't have a flip side, or they never really, you know, ironically enough, never really got published in you know, on an actual piece of vinyl or plastic or whatever?
Well, it's not so much that as that if a song really gets to me and I really want to sing it, I want to feel free to do it. I don't care if it was a big hit or it was the most obscure song in the world. It matters more to me that the song speaks to me and I think I can do something to it.
You put your own take on it, so to speak.
Right. I mean, there's no sense doing a letter for letter, note for note copy of anything.
Yeah, no, and that's part of the great thing. I mean, there's so many people that, you know, the Shirelles, you know, did all those covers, and really, you know, everybody thought that they were theirs, and they weren't per se.
No, but they were great versions of them.
They were superb versions. So, tell me about today. I mean, you've got Going to Jukesville came out what?
Oh, it's a few months now.
Yeah, it's a few months, and what? So you've obviously continued to, you know, to tour, not only behind it, but just to do what you do. But is there another CD behind it? Or
I have actually three more CDs that I want to make, all different in style. But I was hoping to get one done this winter, but there was a lot of things that worked against it. So I'm going to try to piece it together during the year. Of course, we're going to be playing out, touring and all that. So winter is usually somewhat of an off time for us, and I had a big block of time. I thought, great, but it just couldn't get done. Excuse me. But I'll get it to it sometime this year. I'll at least get it started this year. Maybe next winter I'll finish it. I wanted to have five albums done, one a year, but it looks like I'm going to be derailed a little bit.
Have you ever had a synthesizer on any of the Jukes records?
Oh, sure.
People would never know it.
Or 80s, I guess it was.
People would never suspect, though, would they?
Well, you know, I mean, you go with what the prevailing mode is and give it a shot. I never particularly cared for them. There's nothing like a sound of a good piano or organ. I'm not a big synthesizer person. On the other hand, if it works, what the hell's the difference?
So,
you know, I use saxophone.
Yeah, yeah, but that's a big difference between the Miami horns and the Miami horns on a Roland, that's for sure.
Yeah, but the keyboard players are usually a lot more stable than the horn players. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for that.
The horn players are trouble, aren't they? The horn section's always the ones that are getting arrested, aren't they?
Well, they got got that jazz head thing, and they just they look at me like I'm talking I've got two heads or something.
Hey, you can't boss around the horn section. So I just for fun, and I'm sure you know this, but what happened? SouthsideJohnny.com gets me to Jersey City Online.
That's a whole story that I don't want to go into.
I couldn't believe it. But it's important that people know SouthsideJohnny.org.
That's right. It's kind of a charitable thing.
I was just going to say, so are we implying that Southside Johnny Lyons is a charity?
It's kind of non-profit.
You're a charity? You're a charitable guy? Is that what we're trying to learn?
Yeah, I'm a charitable guy, but it is .org.
Okay, yeah, I knew that. I just had to, I'm sure that I knew there was some legal spiegel thing behind that. I just had to.
Yeah, as usual, you know, I mean. But if you want any of the crap that we sell, we can certainly get it over the internet.
There you go. Tell me about the UK. You just spent a lot of time over there, and you back in '77 you toured with Graham Parker. And
right.
I have to say that if I'm going to pick somebody, and again we play a lot of Graham Parker on the show. In fact, you two have been in the same set together. Duh! What a surprise. But I mean, boy, horn section, vocal tenacity in similar ways.
Yeah, I still see Graham all the time. We just did a couple of things together. I'd like to take him back to England. He's living, I guess, up in northern New York now.
Is he really?
And I see him a lot more than I saw him for the last 10 years. But we remained friends, and it was great. That was a great tour for both of us. We really were trying to kick each other's ass every night, and the papers loved it, too. But it was a good tour. It was a lot of music and did great business.
And also, I mean, the other thing that the two of you have in common, if you're talking about two bands you want to see together, I mean, his cover of, I Want You Back.
Yeah.
I mean, does great, great stuff.
Hold Back the Night, right.
Hold Back the Night, which I still have my original Pink 45 of. I mean, original stuff. So what else... should the world know? I mean, you're. When are you going to retire? When are you going to be too old to? When are you going to be? Well, I'm not telling you to, Johnny. Believe me. When are you going to be too old to rock and roll? Because you just said something. You said I want to do 5 more albums a year. So does that mean like when you turn 60, you're just going to suddenly go on the farm and have the horn section, milk the cows with you?
No, I don't think so. I don't have enough money to retire yet, so I got to keep with it. And besides, I'm enjoying it, so why should I? And the thing is that I don't make teenage rock and roll music. And the music I make has always been fairly adult, adult themes. And I mean, I'm a little crazy on stage, but that's because I'm a little crazy in my head. So it's not a stretch for me. But I don't see any reason to retire. I mean, Bobby Bland is still out playing, and so is B.B. King and Ray Charles, and they're a lot older than I am. And I do make some of the similar types of music in the R&B feel of some of it. So I'm just going to keep going on the way I'm going. But I do have a lot of other musics that I want to try out, and we'll see what happens.
So what do you want to, because it's funny, I met with Martha Davis of the Motels, 80s icons.
Sure, I know Martha.
And Martha is making, I mean, she handed me, for my 20-month-old, she did a children's CD about different animals, and
right.
She's exploring blues, and she's exploring pure folk, and she's doing, and I find that so many people that I talk to that have been, if you'll excuse the expression, rock and roll icons, as they've gotten older, they've naturally pulled some of the kinds of music that really was where they derived their original stuff from and gotten back there, but couldn't do that.
You certainly remember some of the roots, and you go, gee, I'd like to do some of that again. That's what the blues album that I made a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, was about. But it's also, you realize, I can do that kind of stuff. If I want to do acoustic stuff, I know how to do that now. Or if I wanted to do a lounge, songs, piano thing, I could do that if I wanted to. How well I do it, I don't know, but I certainly could explore it. And if it's what you feel like doing, you realize that after all these years, you have the right and the freedom to do that. I mean, you're a professional musician, such as it is.
Whatever that means, right?
Right, and you do. I mean, whatever you want to explore, it's not like when you first started out making records, you thought, oh, I've got to be the same thing all the time or people won't know who I am. Of course, I never fell for that anyway. But you realize that there's just nobody to please but yourself. and you do what you want to do. Some people will react well to it. Others will not like it. So what? As long as it's what you want to do, who cares?
So do you think, I mean, it's funny because you have this, and again, looking on the web and reading message boards, you have this amazingly, I don't want to say cultish because cult is a dangerous word, but you have this amazing fan base, and yet, you know, your quote singles made it to what, number 86 on Billboard? I Don't Want to Go Home, a song that's iconic that so many people know, made it. I looked in my book last night, it bubbled under at 105 on Billboard.
Did it really get that far up?
It did. It's in the bubbling, it's in the Joel Whitburn Bubbling Under book at 105.
Wow.
I know, aren't you impressed?
That far.
And mind you, I got it back then, and you don't know my history, but I mean, I've been DJing since I was 13, you know, a long time ago. So I got it way, way back. I have my original 45, and I got it and immediately said, this is going to be a hit. You know, what did I know, obviously? But, you know, it's just interesting because radio is what it is today. Do you kind of thank the Lord that you were doing what you got your start back then, where there were two types of radio, where there was WABC, but there also was NEWFM, and there were two completely different things. It didn't matter that I Don't Want to Go Home never hit the airwaves on ABC, but it hit the airwaves heavily on NEWFM.
Yeah, that's true. We had what was called freeform radio back then, or FM radio, and they would play whatever they wanted to play, and a lot of us, like Grant Parker and all the rest of us, who never had real hit records, but we made music that people wanted to hear. But for us, for me, it was the constant touring, and always, every time you walked on stage, you said, I got to really do it tonight. Tonight, I got to be the best I could possibly be. Never going through the motions, never being too tired, never being too sick, even if you were tired, even if you were sick. You just get up on stage, and you just blast away and do the best show you possibly can. And you do that for 30 years, and people will go, well, maybe he's okay.
So not to be negative about this, because, you know, I hate people that go out of their way to diss any music that is out there, you know, currently, because let's face it, back in 1970, it was, or 68, it was easy to diss the 1910 Fruit Gum Company as they sold, you know, 5 bazillion records.
Yeah, it's all pop music. What's the difference?
Yeah, but I think the interesting thing is, though, that aside from what I get to do, public radio that I get to do, or Vin or Pete Fornatel, or, you know, all of us that are out there that left the commercial world to kind of go into a different place. I mean, if there's the next Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes playing in a bar right now, and they're just friggin' incredible, what chance have they got given the state of that there is no free form anymore?
Well, we've got some bands that are like that in New Jersey, Highway 9, and there's a bunch of them. And they're all kind of making a little bit of noise around in New Jersey, and they're starting out kind of the way we are, we did anyway, just making their own reputation locally. And maybe you won't get a chance to get it played on the radio as much as we did, but you still can have a life, and you can still make the music you want to make. You just gotta do it every night.
Yeah.
I lived in Nashville for a number of years, and there were people down there that I would see, and they'd be just great. And I'd think, man, they got it. I'd see them a week later, and they'd be dull. How can you do that? How can you let yourself down like that, you know?
So basically what you're saying is being in rock and roll, everybody thinks it's kind of the life, but it's about working hard.
It's, you got to work every night. I mean, I always think of it this way. If we're in, like, East Jamoke, Mississippi, and we're not going to be there again for another 5 years, all the people that come to see us, this is the only chance they're ever going to have to see us. So we might not want to play because it's East Jamoke and there's only 150 people in the audience, but every 150 of those people, I want them to go home and thinking, that was a great band. It's one thing if you're playing to people that have seen you a dozen times. And then, of course, you got to do different things. So it's a different challenge. But you really got to, you got to respect the fact that people came out to see you. There are a billion bands. There's 150 channels on TV. There's 100,000 movies that come out a year, books, CDs, every possible way of entertaining yourself. And if they're going to get in their car and drive and pay money to sit and watch you, the only thing you can say to yourself is, I got to give everything I got to these people.
So we'll never see a backing tape at a Southside Johnny show, huh?
No, they threaten to put up a cardboard cutout of me sometimes.
Yeah, well, you'd probably be behind it lip syncing.
Yeah, no, I can't lip sync. I tried that one time on a TV show, and I just started laughing too hard.
It's the funniest thing I purchased. I don't know if you've seen them, but, you know, on TV you can get the DVDs of the Hullabaloo shows.
Right.
And it's funny because the intro of the show lists about 24 bands. You know, it's tonight, Hermits, Fabian, blah, blah, blah. And you're thinking, how could they possibly do the setup for that many bands?
Right.
And then it is the best comedy you've ever seen. To watch these poor guys, particularly, I think the only person that's in worse trouble than a vocalist is the drummer.
Yeah.
Because the poor drummer is trying to do what he did on the record, and he can't do it. You know, he can't duplicate it, so they're way off, and it's really comical.
Yeah, well, a lot of bands couldn't play, but a lot of them could, too. I remember seeing the Yardbirds on there. They were screaming.
Oh, yeah. Well, the ones that were really good, but that's the thing, is they always combined with so many, and it was pretty amazing. So, John, thank you so much. I want you to do two things for me. Can you do, if I read you two ideas, can you parrot them back to me and make your own version of them?
Sure.
So the first one's really easy. It's just, hi, this is Southside Johnny, and you're listening. The name of the show is The Menace's Attic.
And yeah, hold on, let me write that.
Okay. This is the straight one, and then I'll give you something stupid to do. Since
right.
The Menace's Attic on 90.3 KUSF. And do anything you want with it, obviously.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Let me know.
Go ahead.
Hey, this is Southside Johnny from the Jukes, and you're in the Menace's Attic, you poor fool, on 90.3 KUSF.
Excellent. Okay, this is the one that I just want you to have some fun with. So something like, same kind of thing, but hi, this is Southside Johnny, and I've invited Dennis the Menace to be one of the Jukes. And something like, his singing voice sucks, but I'll just have the horn section drown him out.
Okay, hold on, I gotta write.